From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. At the Pope's meeting with American cardinals at the Vatican last week, some cardinals suggested that gay priests were to blame for the crisis in the church. The sex abuse scandal has put gay priests in the spotlight like never before. In this hour, homosexuality in the priesthood of the Catholic Church. We begin tonight with some good news from the West Bank, where 26 Palestinians have emerged from Bethlehem's Church of the Nativity. It is the largest number to come out of the besieged compound since a standoff with Israeli troops began nearly a month ago. Doug Strzok is a correspondent for the Washington Post in Jerusalem. Earlier, I asked what direction the standoff is now taking.
Those on both sides saw the departure of some 26 Palestinians from the church today as a good sign, but nevertheless, the negotiations over the remaining 150 to 200 are spluttering along and not moving very fast. Secretary of State Colin Powell has said he expects this to be resolved soon, but on the ground here, it doesn't appear that that's happening.
What do we know about what's going on inside the church? Who's in there, and what are the dynamics of determining who comes out?
There's been a dispute about exactly the status of those who are there. The Israelis have said that most of those inside the church are hostages of about 30 or so armed gunmen whom Israel wants to either arrest or exile. But there have been a number of people who have come out previously, and they've sharply disputed that account. They say that the people inside are clergy, are church workers, are other Palestinians from around Bethlehem who fled into the church when the Israeli invasion came, and they are there voluntarily on their own accord. The 26 who left today were basically those who decided on their own to leave. They certainly did not appear to be released hostages when they came out.
What are the conditions inside the church as far as we know at this point?
We haven't been able to talk to the 26 who came out today, but others who came out earlier have described a pretty grim scene inside. It's dark. They have to stay away from windows. They've basically run out of food. They've basically run out of potable water. In fact, the negotiations right now are stalled over the demand by Palestinian negotiators that food and water be taken into those in the church. They've finally removed two corpses of people who had been shot earlier, so at least the smell of the place is a little bit improved, but there are still said to be wounded inside, and it seems pretty grim.
If the conditions inside are so awful and the Palestinians there are not gunmen, therefore presumably ultimately not liable to incarceration, why don't they just come out?
Well, for one thing, the Palestinians do not trust the Israeli claims that they will not be subject to some sort of interrogation or incarceration just for being there. Secondly, there's a large degree of solidarity operating here. Because of the Israeli incursion into the West Bank, Palestinians feel that there's a certain amount of patriotism in standing beside those who are wanted by the Israelis. So those who have come out of the church have said that people inside are basically staying in order to support the wanted Palestinians.
And obviously it is only the religious stature or standing of this structure that's keeping it from being taken over quite quickly by the Israeli military.
Yes, clearly Israel is leery of going into a place that is a holy site for Christianity and has basically said that it will not attack the Church of Nativity in Bethlehem. Instead, will lay siege to it and eventually hope for a negotiated outcome.
Is there any way in which the wanted men inside may be part of the U.S. brokered deal over Yasser Arafat that we saw over the weekend, where his situation was eased by the U.S. and Britain offering to monitor the incarceration of Palestinian prisoners?
Something like that might be worked out. There were hints that the United States was trying to become involved, but the Palestinian negotiators here say they haven't seen much sign of U.S. involvement. Clearly, if there were some sort of sustained international attempt to resolve this, either from the United States or other countries, because of the importance to all of Christianity of this church, there could be some sort of negotiated deal.
I was intrigued by the Israeli offer of exile to gunmen inside the Church of the Nativity. Is this standard practice to just ship people out of the country? Does that really solve the situation? Is there precedent for that?
There is a lot of precedent for that, and that's exactly why the Palestinians are rejecting that. They feel that in the past, during the long occupation of Palestinian territories by Israel, Israel has used exile to get rid of people it didn't want there. And so the Palestinian Authority now says, we believe we should have our own state, and we believe we have a right not to be sent out of this country, which is ours. So they are rejecting on principle the option of exile.
Doug Strzok, thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Doug Strzok is a correspondent with The Washington Post. He spoke to us from Jerusalem. There are no hard numbers on how many Catholic priests in America are homosexual, but there are studies that suggest up to 50%. The priesthood, says former seminary rector Donald Cousins, is becoming a gay profession. As details of the priest sex abuse scandal emerge, so too do once hushed details of life in the seminary and a rectory. There are reports of commonplace gay sex among seminarians and tension between gay and straight clergymen. The clergy's buried truth of significant homosexuality is on the table. So what do you make of it? Does it matter if priests are gay? Are gay priests being made scapegoats for the sex abuse scandal? And how do you reconcile church teachings about homosexuality with all this new information? Join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us now from New Orleans is Jason Berry. He's an investigative journalist who has put a national spotlight on the issue of priestly sexual abuse of the young and is author of Lead Us Not Into Temptation, Catholic Priests and Sexual Abuse of Children. Good evening and welcome, Jason Berry.
Thank you very much.
And with us from the studios of Vermont Public Radio is On Point news analyst and senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly, Jack Beattie. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom.
Jason Berry, weigh in for us right at the top, if you will, with the facts, or the facts as we know them. What are the basics here? What is the gay presence in the Catholic priesthood in America, and what trends have we seen?
Well, there's no hard data. That's the first thing that has to be said. Father Cousins' book, which is, I think, an extremely brave and thoughtful analysis, suggests that the priesthood is indeed becoming a gay profession. When I was finishing the research on Lead Us Not Into Temptation in 1992, I had access to various anecdotal reports and surveys. There have been others since, which indicated that anywhere from 40 to 50% of priests were homosexual in orientation. It doesn't, of course, necessarily follow that just because one is homosexual, one is sexually active.
Of course.
I will say this, that among the interviews I did with gay priests in the late 80s and early 90s, 40 or 50, spaced geographically across the country, I found that among men of my generation, born after World War II, there was a rock-like consensus that anywhere from 60% or higher were gay. Obviously, we don't have any firm numbers here, but I think if you read some of the essays that Andrew Greeley, Richard McBrien, and other priests, interestingly liberals, were writing in the early 90s, there was a great frustration being voiced back then that was largely ignored. What I find ironic...
Frustration with what, Jason Berry?
Frustration with the fact that the bishops weren't taking notice of this, were not addressing it. Greeley, in particular, who has been pilloried by the Catholic right on a number of occasions, was saying that there are lavender rectories. He made the point in a National Catholic Reporter essay, which, in fact, I quoted in my book, that if a priest were known to be having an affair with a woman, the bishop would move him immediately, but there is a much greater tolerance of the private lives of gay priests. You know, this is something that has gotten very little attention in most of the media coverage that I've seen. The Newsweek cover story this week ignores it entirely, and that is the older priests who have struggled with the lives of celibate witness feel cheated, in a sense, that so many of the younger men who've come in during the period when the seminary standards changed, became quite relaxed, are now feeling, in a sense, that the priesthood they entered is not the priesthood that now exists, and although they played by the rules, younger men who came after them did not.
What's the distinction you're drawing there, that the older men struggled to maintain celibacy and younger men, homosexual priests or priestly candidates, do not?
Yes, that is the sentiment that many of these men felt. I guess what struck me the most in the research and interviews that I did was that when I interviewed a lot of these guys, I'm talking about younger priests who were gay, once they had assurances of anonymity, and of course I was more than willing to do interviews without identifying them by name because they were concerned that if they even admitted they were gay or homosexual in orientation, that the bishop would punish them in some way. But once I gave them the assurance of anonymity, they immediately started talking about their sex lives. I found that troubling because of the issue of hypocrisy. If you're going to be a priest, well, then we should expect you to, you know, live as a priest should. And if you want to be, if you want to have an active sex life and be part of the gay community, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that, but you should do it not live in a closet as a priest and then come out at night. It was the hypocrisy that I found more than ironic, rather a sobering paradox.
Jason Berry, what's the perception of this issue within the Catholic Church, the priesthood and laity? I mean, is this just something that everybody knows and presumes and talks about, or is this a closeted fact of life?
Well, I think it's getting a lot of attention now because of the sort of critical mass in the news media on the larger question of, you know, pedophilia and so forth. But I think many Catholics are aware that the problem exists. I think the bishops have been in absolutely disgraceful denial about it all. They've been willing to ordain men and sort of pass them along, so to speak, because of the numbers problem, because the number of vocations has gone down so dramatically. And I would add one other thing. You know, this is not a conventional issue that you can sort of draw a line between conservatives on one side, liberals on another. This is an issue with a lot of gray area to it, and I think there is a concern in the media, an understandable one to say the least, that the church not engage in some homophobic witch hunt. I would certainly hate to see that. On the other hand, I think we have to ask ourselves, as we look at the spectacle of Cardinal Law, Cardinal Mahoney in Los Angeles, Bishop Rodheimer in New Jersey, and others who have handled these cases so badly, why is there such a widespread mentality of duplicity? And I think the answer, tersely put, is that when you cover up one form of sexual behavior, the natural tendency is to cover all forms of sexual behavior. And I think the long-standing approach to homosexuality was, well, yes, we have a problem, but let's not talk about it. And when men who were sexually active with adults were sort of in one corner, you might say, here at the other extreme were men abusing teenage boys, and that same mentality of secrecy and duplicity extended to them.
So it's a culture of secrecy that may have come back to bite the church.
Absolutely.
Jack Beatty, what do you hear in this sort of opening door into a world that hasn't been much publicly discussed?
Well, to those of us who are civilians in this matter, who don't, as they say, have a dog in this hunt, the aspect of this that I think gains attention is homophobia. I mean, the church, a friend of mine says, who knows something about this, is the world's leading propagator of homophobia. And yet, if these statistics are true, more than half of its younger priests, at least, are themselves practicing homosexuals. Now, this is an appalling, not just hypocrisy, but a kind of, masochism that's...
Seem to have lost Jack Beatty's line there.
Ah.
We'll come back to Jack after the break. Jason Berry, stand by.
Okay.
We're going into a break. We're talking about homosexuality in the Catholic clergy. And word coming out now from both the hierarchy of the church, where concern is being expressed, and from members of the clergy, that this is an issue that may lie behind a kind of culture of secrecy around sexuality. What do we make of an institution that preaches against homosexuality while maybe half its priests are gay? And should gay Catholics be priests? And if not, who will stand at the altar? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about homosexuality in the American Catholic clergy tonight. The question is, should gay Catholics be priests? And if not, who will stand at the altar? Do you see a link between church homosexuality and church sex abuse? Are gay priests being made scapegoats in the Catholic sex abuse scandal? We're joined this hour by Jason Berry. He's an investigative journalist who's put a national spotlight on the issue of priestly sexual abuse of the young. And now by Father Thomas Rausch. He's head of the theology department at Loyola Marymount University. Good evening and welcome, Father Thomas Rausch.
Thank you. It's nice to be with you.
Thanks for being with us. Father Rausch, take us first, if you would, into the Catholic Church's teachings on homosexuality. Our news analyst Jack Beatty has just described the Catholic Church as a major force for homophobia. What are the basic teachings, and do they amount to homophobia?
What the Church says in its official teaching is that homosexual actions are wrong, since sexuality is appropriately carried out within the context of marriage. It's very clear that being homosexual is not evil, it's not a sin. It's only acting out on what is considered by official Catholic theology as a disordered inclination. I think it's very important to note that the Catechism of the Catholic Church says very clearly that being homosexual is not a choice. It's something that happens to some people, and I'm not sure that the Church has fully plumbed the depth of what that means, but the fact that it says that in its official catechism, I think, is very significant.
In recent weeks, we've seen American bishops coming out and cardinals coming out rather critical of the homosexual population among the Catholic priests in America. Bishop Wilton D. Gregory, president of the National Conference on Catholic Bishops, saying it is most importantly a struggle to make sure that the Catholic priesthood is not dominated by homosexual men. What's driving this kind of comment and concern, Father Rausch?
I'm not sure exactly what's driving it. This has been an enormously traumatic moment for the Catholic Church in the United States, and I have to say that our hierarchy has not dealt with it well. The signals have been clear for some time, although I think it's also true that what the news media has focused on is a number of cases in a number of dioceses and not the fact that many dioceses have firm policies in place and have had so since at least since the end of the 80s, the early 90s.
You're talking not about homosexuality, but about sex abuse.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. But there's a tendency on the part of some to say, well, a lot of these cases involve relations with young men, and therefore it must be a question of homosexuality.
Is there some kind of built-in conflict here? We see the comment from Joaquin Navarro-Valls, the Holy See's press officer, I guess, who says people with homosexual inclinations just cannot be ordained.
Not only that, he said their ordinations are invalid. Most theologians were absolutely stunned by that statement. That was a very unknowledgeable statement, I think.
Why is this call being raised now?
Well, I think there's a concern to find reasons and perhaps even people to blame it on.
To blame the sexual abuse of children.
Right.
Is there a reasonable link or not between the presence of between the widespread presence of gay priests and the sexual abuse problem?
I don't think there's any clear evidence of that at the moment. My own suspicion is that first of all, we have to note that a lot of these cases were cases that took place 15, 20, 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it's all taking place right now. There's enormous progress that has been made since the mid-80s. But why? What's going on here exactly? That's what we have to ask. I think there's a tendency to say, well, it must have something to do with homosexuality because so many of the victims are young men. And I don't think there's any clear evidence of that. I suspect that a lot of these cases that happened 15, 20, 25 years ago happened by men who had not processed and worked through their own sexual identity.
Mm-hmm.
They were probably homosexual men who would not be willing to say or able to say that they were gay.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a kind of evolution within the homosexual community as it's become more acceptable as gays have been more outspoken in our society. And I think that's affected gays within the priesthood and religious life as well.
Jason Berry, jump in here. Do you see a link between is the homosexuality of some portion of the Catholic clergy relevant or not at all relevant to the sex abuse scandal?
Oh, I think it is relevant, but I think it's important to
recognize the nuances here.
Okay.
First of all, I certainly agree with Father Rausch that most homosexuals do not molest children. And it's very important to keep that idea in the forefront of our thoughts as the national conversation continues. On the other hand, many of these cases involve older teenage boys. And while it is correct, I think, in one sense to say that the perpetrators perhaps were not fully integrated, in a sense, with their own sexual identities or not coming to terms with the fact that they were gay, I think we have to be honest here and recognize that when you have so many seminaries, as was the case in the 1980s, with a lot of acting out and patterns of sexual activity, I have a chapter in my book called San Diego, the New Gay Clericalism, which focuses on a young man, an ex-Marine, who went into the seminary in San Diego in the 1980s and was basically kicked out for protesting gay peer pressure. There was a lawsuit that 60 Minutes did a piece on a few years back in San Francisco involving a young man who entered the Jesuit novitiate there and was basically driven out because he wouldn't get it on with people in the seminary. I'm not at all implying that...
But that's different than drawing a link between priests and child sex abuse?
Well, I'm not sure I'm not sure that there's a difference here, because if you
can
have...
Can I say something here?
Yes, Father Thomas Rausch.
Yeah, I want to say, first of all, about that case in San Francisco. I mean, that happened in my province. And the reporting on that was so totally inaccurate, totally inaccurate. Mm-hmm. I'm really surprised that Jason Berry would say that, because it says he doesn't know a lot about the situation.
Are we talking about the same case,
yes,
San Diego or San Francisco?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And you said he was driven out because he would not give in to homosexual overtures from others. That simply is not the case. And when I cut into this program, I heard somebody say, I don't know if it was Jason Berry, that more than half of young priests are practicing homosexuals. That certainly is no way true.
No, I didn't say that, Father, with all due respect.
Okay. No, I think Jack Beatty said that, and perhaps the practicing word is wrong there. And
yeah, exactly.
To be fair, the studies say talk about 30% to 50% with a homosexual orientation, whatever that means.
Which is a very different thing.
What was the case then? Because I saw the 60 Minutes piece. Please enlighten me on how it was wrong.
I'm really not prepared to discuss all the particulars of that case. Let me just say it was wrong, and they should have done more homework before they broadcast that.
Let's leave that one story as a disputed issue for right now. We've got bigger fish to fry here, maybe, and I want to bring our callers in as well. Patricia's on the line. Welcome, Patricia. You're on the air.
Hello. I just wanted to give a background that I was raised Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And confirmed as well. I am not practicing in the church at the moment, but I'm appalled at all the information that I'm hearing connecting pedophilia to homosexuality.
That you're hearing generally, that you're hearing tonight, that you're hearing...
Hearing tonight and also the church. I think that, as you spoke before, mm-hmm. saying that the church is using homosexuals as a scapegoat.
Father Rausch, what do you make of Patricia's observation?
Yeah, well, that's what I said.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a couple members of the hierarchy have recently suggested that there was a connection here, and I think that
than a couple. In fairness, Cardinal Egan said, or his stand-in at St. Patrick's said a couple Sundays ago that homosexuals should be barred from the priesthood. Cardinal Maida in Detroit said, it's not truly a pedophilia-type problem, but a homosexual-type problem. Cardinal George in Chicago said gay should be kept out of the priesthood. It's getting to be a considerable number.
Yeah, I'm afraid that certainly would not be my position. That the most critical issue is a young man or any man who approaches the priesthood able to live a celibate life, whether they're homosexual or heterosexual. That's the crucial issue. And there has to be some better way of discerning that. It's a very difficult issue when you're interviewing candidates. Are they able to live a celibate life? Are they willing to live a celibate life? That's the crucial issue. But to blame the scandal on gay priests I think is really unfortunate.
And what about there's a more subtle and perhaps not damning observation Jason Berry makes that the presence of so many homosexual priests has, in a context that's not fully welcoming of homosexuality, has created a kind of cloak of secrecy around sexuality in general that may have been part of the problem, part of the cover-up and the unwillingness to see and talk about what was going on.
Well, I think there's always a cloak of secrecy around homosexuality. I mean, child abuse takes place far more in families than it does with ordained ministers. Mm. And there's certainly not a lot of talk about that. There needs to be more talk about that. I'm a little put off by that cloak of secrecy language because I think most people are discreet in this area.
Jason Berry, I know we have to let you go. Final thoughts.
Well, I guess what concerns me is that as a culture, we have not reached the point where we can go behind black and white distinctions. This is not a clear black and white narrative.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a Manichaean story of first forces of good against forces of evil.
Right.
But there are problems with the gay priest subculture. When you go and interview men in rectories and you give them assurances of anonymity, and the first thing they start doing is talking about their sex lives, that naturally makes a journalist wonder what is going on in the priesthood. I certainly don't want to see any witch hunt, and if the information that I got about the case in San Francisco is wrong, I apologize for passing on inaccurate information. I try to be correct in what I report. I did not write about in that book about that case in my book, but I will say this. I think when young men go into the priesthood expecting to lead celibate lives, and around them are others who are far more cynical about it, there is going to be a collision. There's going to be a tension. I think when the cardinals say that there's no room in the priesthood for homosexuals, they're being terribly hypocritical because they've been ordaining them for years. They know that. And now they're trying to get cover as the media starts to focus on this. Mm. What I find so disturbing, quite frankly, is that we haven't moved as a culture from the point of recognizing that when people are victimized, we should speak out. And when those who have been victimized, some small portion of them, enter into cultural environments where they, in turn, gain power and are unfair and victimized. I'm not talking about molesting teenage boys, but I'm talking about the cliques and the power preserves that emerge in the clericalist culture. I mean, this is a reality, and I would assume that Father is aware of this. It exists in many dioceses. I mean, here in New Orleans, it's very widely known that there's a certain priest in one of the more prosperous parishes who leads a lavish lifestyle. Everybody wonders where he gets the money. He raises money for construction of the church, and the rectory is almost a party house. Well, nothing happens, and yet people talk. The newspaper doesn't report about it, and yet everyone has questions. This is not to say that every gay priest is like that. I know very fine priests who happen to be homosexual. I know very fine gay men who are in the priesthood. I think what we face as a church right now is a profound collision. This is a moment that we do not have an adequate vocabulary for, and what I grieve about is the fact that we have been unable as a church to come to terms with the terrible inconsistencies within our social fabric, within our own clerical culture. And I think all Catholic, I was educated by Jesuits. I have benevolent memories of the priests and nuns who taught me, and frankly, it grieves me to see the church in this state. And yet, I think as a writer, I have an obligation to speak out.
Jason Berry, thanks for joining us tonight.
It's been my pleasure.
Jason Berry is author of Lead Us Not Into Temptation, Catholic Priests and the Sexual Abuse of Children. Jack Beatty, are you back with us?
I hope so.
Yes, there you are. Jason Berry talks about a missing vocabulary for discussing the nuances of this problem. Do you see that?
Yeah, I could just hear it in his trying to get at the, you know, on the one hand, on the other, the shades of gray involved in this. And by the way, I want to apologize to Father Rausch. I misinterpreted what Jason Berry had said earlier about the incidence of homosexuality, and I apologize for saying that. But I want to make an observation. Let's posit a future. Let's suppose that the church, as some fear, will use its gay priests as scapegoats, will drive many of them out, with the result that there'll be fewer and fewer priests for more and more Catholics. In a way, you could then see the Catholic clerical caste like the Shakers. You know, it's caught by a doctrine of celibacy in a spiral of sterility, unable to reproduce itself. And you can easily imagine under those circumstances that the laity would have to assume the bare ruined choir left by the retreating priests and begin, as they did in the early church, to elect their own priests and to be the priests themselves. I'm not saying this is going to happen, but let's just project matters ahead in the future and wonder about that. I wonder what you think about that, Father Rush.
Father Rush, you may not buy the prescription, but what about the possibility that Jack Beattie describes, homosexuals driven out of the priesthood and just not enough priests to keep the church going?
Well, I like the image of bare ruined choirs. I think that's very appropriate. I think that the church is going through a purification right now. And though it's enormously painful, I think in many ways it's good. There's no question that there have been priests, heterosexual and homosexual, who have not been faithful to their vows. And one of the things I think that this purification is going to do is bring home in a very powerful new way the whole issue of integrity in what one professes and what one claims to be. The question of the future, all of our churches are wrestling with this issue of homosexuality and the ordained ministry. The Catholic Church, in some ways, is a little better off than some because it expects all of its ministers to be celibate, whereas most of the mainline Protestant churches are wrestling with the issue of ordaining practicing homosexuals. And there's still the whole issue of the morality of homosexuality, which is something that all of our churches are struggling
with. But is that an advantage or a disadvantage when secrecy has to surround the homosexuality?
Well, it's not so secret anymore.
Perhaps not. Jason Berry talks about a gay priest subculture. Do you see that in the Catholic Church and its clergy and hierarchy?
Yeah, I've seen it sometimes. I don't want to deny that it's never there. I don't want to suggest that that's the dominant culture of seminaries and of religious houses today. But it's a reality. It's a reality. We have a whole new openness to sexuality, sexual orientation today. I remember a very interesting article by Richard Rodriguez a few years ago that claimed when we went through this whole crisis about 5 or 10 years ago, that it was not a problem of the church or a priest. It was a problem. It was a societal problem because of the sort of sexualization of life in American culture, and that there was this expectation that everyone was sexually active.
Do you see Jack Beattie's prescription emerging here, that the laity may inevitably take a greater role in the church as part of this purification process you
described? Yeah, I think this is one of the things that has to be addressed, and my disappointment in the meeting in Rome was that it was not addressed. But the meeting in Rome was not a legislative meeting. I think this was misunderstood by many people in the media. The legislation will come out of the June meeting of the American Conference of Catholic Bishops. What the meeting in Rome was to do was for the Pope to consult with the cardinals and to try to give them some kind of support. But my hope out of this purification process is that there will be greater accountability, there will be a greater openness in the church, that we have to look at the requirements for ordination, which means that we have to look at the question of ultimately ordaining married men. I think we have to look at how bishops are selected. Part of the problem is that bishops have been chosen by Rome, often without a lot of input from the local church.
Father Thomas Rausch, please stand by. We've got to take a short break. We're talking about homosexuality in the Catholic clergy. What do we make of an institution that preaches against homosexuality while maybe half its priests are gay? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about homosexuality in the Catholic clergy in America. Do you see a link between church homosexuality and church sex abuse? Are gay priests being made scapegoats in the Catholic sex abuse scandal? Does it matter to you, one way or another, if half America's priests are gay? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined right now by Jeff Stone. He's a member of Dignity. It's a national organization of gay Catholics. He participated in a protest in Manhattan on Sunday at St. Patrick's Cathedral against what I guess, Jeff Stone, tell us. I guess it was against the concern over a witch hunt against gays in the Catholic clergy.
Well, that's exactly right. We were particularly reacting to the remarks of Monsignor Clark, who, as you mentioned, was Cardinal Egan's stand-in at the homily the previous week, in which he stated that homosexuals were essentially unfit to be part of the priesthood. But I'd like to go right to a couple of things that Jason Barry said, which disturbed me. I think he's done a tremendous amount of research that has been very useful. But I think there is an issue of sexual hypocrisy and secrecy in the church. But he's laying the responsibility for that entirely, it seems to me, at the feet of gay priests. And if you look at studies of priests and sexuality, such as Richard Sipes' book, Sex, Priests, and Power, and so forth, the percentage of gay priests who are sexually active is no different than the percentage of straight priests who are sexually active. This is what I find to be missing from Mr. Barry's remarks, and I have to say I'm disturbed by the drift of those remarks.
The thing that was picked up, and maybe driving part of that, Donald Cousins, the former seminary rector, has written recently talking about Sipes' book, where he quotes it saying that post-pubescent boys are victimized by priests at a rate that is four times greater than post-pubescent girls. And I guess the interpretation being made of that is that is an indication of homosexuality at work. Do you say no, Jeff Stone?
Well, I will quote Father Stephen Rossetti, who's a psychologist and a sex abuse consultant at the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. And what he says is to say that most victims of priests are young males, and therefore that shows that this abuse is overwhelmingly done by homosexual men, is easily open to misinterpretation. I'm quoting now. Most priests who molest minors were themselves molested as minors. Their sexual abuse is for many a kind of reenactment of their own abuse and may have little to do with their sexual orientation. I have known some heterosexually oriented males who molested young males. The issue is therefore not so much homosexuality, but their stunted emotional development. The New York Times has run similar stories and quoted experts who suggest that, and this was actually, I too am searching for an explanation of this. The gay community is obviously very disturbed by this perception and potentially a reality if this is indeed the case. But
so, Justin, when Dignity, your group, is protesting outside St. Patrick's, I think we have a sense of what you're protesting against, that the concern over child sex abuse turned into a witch hunt against gays.
Yes.
What are you protesting for, if you will? What shift or change or development would you like to see?
Well, the developments we'd like to see are partially the same developments that I think every thinking person, every thinking, feeling, sane person would like to see, which is they would like to see that allegations of sexual abuse are handled properly, that they are turned over to civil authorities, that children are protected. Beyond that, in the larger picture, we would like to see a church in which priests can acknowledge their homosexuality. In fact, despite church teaching that to be homosexual is not a sin in and of itself, very few priests have come out as being homosexual, and very few feel safe doing so.
And Father Rausch, I want to put Jeff Stone's concern to you. We're between a rock and a hard place, it would appear. Cardinals saying we've got to cut back on this. Jeff Stone, a gay Catholic, saying homosexual priests have to feel more comfortable in coming out.
Certainly, for any human being to own, to be comfortable with, to acknowledge one's sexual orientation is very important. And I think we're better off today in which we're aware of this than we were, I would say, 20 or 30 or 40 years ago when there was a great deal of repression and denial about these things. I think one thing, though, that's very important to say is that when a man defines his priesthood in terms of his sexual orientation, there's a problem. There's a big difference between being a priest who happens to be gay and being a gay priest or a heterosexual priest, a straight
priest. I am not talking about defining priesthood in terms of sexuality, Father. I am talking about the simple acknowledgement of one's orientation. One is presumed to be heterosexual in this society unless one declares otherwise. Is therefore heterosexuality the identifying mark of the priest?
Or I guess, Father Rausch, if we could, what about Jeff Stone's call for priests to be able to announce their homosexuality? Is there something wrong with that in your mind?
You know, I think that's the kind of decision that a person makes with friends to whom he is very close. It's a very prudential kind of decision. It's not the kind of thing that one announces from the pulpit.
I know priests who have done it, Father, and have been very well accepted in their parishes. I consider them to be very courageous. And we're looking for a church that will be open to people who are heterosexual, homosexual.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about.
I want the same thing, but the reason I made the distinction between a priest who is gay and a gay priest is if a priest is defining himself in terms of sexual orientation, there's all sorts of things that go along with that. If a priest or a seminarian is going to gay bars, that's inappropriate. If his entertainments are all gay-oriented, that's inappropriate. That cuts him off from half of the people of God, half of the church. sexuality is part of who we are, but it shouldn't be the defining issue. That's what I'm trying to say.
Jeff Stone from Dignity, it's a national organization of gay Catholics. Thank you very much for coming on tonight. I want to turn to caller Rachel. Rachel, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. You know, first of all, I just kind of want to state that I'm all for homosexuality in the general population, but
okay.
I was under the impression that homosexuality was basically against Catholic law, and that, I mean, I could be wrong, but I'm a Catholic. All my family are Catholics. And
that's the perspective you've grown up with.
Well, it's the perspective I've grown up with, yeah, but, I mean, if we have priests that are homosexual, aren't they doing the exact thing that they're preaching against? Now, if I'm wrong in that statement, that's fine. But definitely premarital sex is against Catholic law in general. So whether we have heterosexual or homosexual priests having sex in the seminary, how are we supposed to be led by these people?
Father Rausch, could you go to both of those? First of all, you made a distinction earlier between, being homosexual, which you said the church accepts, and homosexual activity, which you said the church does not. Is that correct?
That's right.
So to Rachel's question, if people or seminarians slip over that line, how can lay Catholics look forward to being led by these individuals?
They have a very real concern with that. I think all of us, married or single, gay or straight, homosexual or heterosexual, have to be honest about who we are and what we are doing. If we take a position in which we are promising celibacy and we're not faithful to that, then we put the whole church in jeopardy. The church loses its credibility and our own integrity is shattered. I think what she's asking about is, what I didn't hear in her question was the distinction between being homosexual and living a homosexual lifestyle. There are many wonderful homosexual priests. There are many priests who are honest about their identity as gay men, who do wonderful work for the church, who do not define themselves in terms of sexual orientation. They define themselves as being disciples of Jesus, as being priests. And we welcome them. How could we carry out our mission as a church without these men? But those who are violating their vows, their public vows of celibacy, of chastity, whether they're homosexual or heterosexual, bring dishonor on the church and show a great lack of integrity in their own lives.
Rachel, thanks for calling. Father Rausch, Donald Cousins writes that in seminary context and in the priesthood, that there's a kind of resentment among heterosexual priests that celibacy only seems to apply strictly to them, that it seems to be optional for gay priests who are surrounded by men in the clerical life.
You know, I don't remember Father Cousins putting it quite that strongly. What I remember him saying in the book, and it was a very important book because it raised this issue in a very public way by a man who had been a seminary rector, he said that sometimes heterosexual seminarians in a seminary that has a majority of gay seminarians don't feel at home, don't feel comfortable, don't feel that this is a community in which they can live.
That may be in the book. This Sunday in the Boston Globe, he wrote, heterosexual priests, moreover, remark among themselves that celibacy is, in effect, optional for gay priests.
Well, I don't know anybody. I mean, there certainly are gay priests who are violating their vows, but I don't know anyone who would legitimate that.
In principle, but in practice?
In practice, of course. Does it happen? Yes.
Lucille is on the line. Welcome, Lucille. You're on the air.
Hi. I uphold celibacy for priests. I think that it's a very honorable thing, and it's a great service to the whole world. I would like to make a remark that I think that this is more than a question of celibacy. It's a matter of isolation. If the priests were to minister to the laity and become involved in their lives, come to their house, drink coffee, do all that stuff, then they would A, be less likely to be able to get away with any type of abuse, financial, sexual, or anything else, and also they just feel much more a part of the people, and that they would, that it just would open themselves up to more.
Yeah, Lucille, you're saying get them out of the rectory, get them out among Catholics.
Yeah.
Lucille, thanks for your call. Jack Beattie, let me put that to you. It comes back to your theme of an empowered or engaged laity. Lucille says just get people out among the faithful and they'll be all right.
Well, there's great precedent for this. The worker priests of France are still remembered. Dorothy Day, the Catholic worker, the sense of the church reaching out and becoming part of people's lives. I think that's and you know, the loneliness of priests. I mean, perhaps Father can talk about this. This must be extreme in this world today, and especially with this scandal.
Father Rausch?
Well, my sense is that a good priest today is so enormously overburdened because of the shortage of priests that they don't always have the time to go out and drink coffee and meet the folks in their homes, as Lucille was mentioning. I mean, that's a very I'm very touched by that plea. But I'm also aware of so many priests who are not able to do that because they have an endless round of meetings, sacraments, liturgies, commitments, people to see.
Might be something more important, though.
You have to do that if you're the pastor of the parish. It's very difficult. I know priests, because of the shortage of priests, who have to pastor two parishes simultaneously. That's an enormous burden on a person and prevents them from being as close, being able to go out and mingle around among the people of God as much as they would like.
And yet to miss that contact must be painful. Let's get one more call. Steve is on the line. Welcome, Steve. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Real well, thanks.
I think the bigger question that hasn't been addressed is, why are so many gay men attracted to the priesthood? I mean, if in fact 50% of the priests are gay, that is so out of proportion with the rest of the population.
And in fairness, people are saying 30-50% may have a homosexual orientation. But,
right.
but it's a good, straightforward question. Let me put it to Father Rausch.
Well, we've been taking 50% as a norm. You know, this, what most people are estimating is somewhere between 30 and 50. So I think that needs to be said right away. I think that to join what seems to be, you know, an all-male community is probably attractive to homosexuals. I don't think that's the only reason. I think many gay men are enormously talented. They're drawn towards the helping professions. They're creative. They see an opportunity for ministry that calls upon their talents. So I think we have to be very careful about, you know, making judgments about why gay men are drawn to the priesthood.
Sure. There obviously is an enormous spectrum of reasons and many entirely just totally admirable.
Right. Exactly.
Jack Beatty, here we are. Steve's asking, why are they there? And it seems, you know, that could easily be an insult to a man who's come to really do service in the church.
Yeah, and I can imagine, you know, that gay priests would be especially attracted to the problems of the outsider, the excluded. And after all, these are the people that are at the center of Jesus' teaching. And so I can imagine a kind of identification with the people who are not so successful, who are struggling, and that would actually recommend them.
And yet, Father Rausch, if they're not comfortable there or if they can't be open about their sexuality there, then Steve's question comes up again, and people want to know, well, what's the impact of this hidden factor?
You know, I think that in seminaries and religious houses today, there's a whole new openness about sexual orientation. When candidates are interviewed for the religious life or the priesthood, it's simply a matter of course to ask them what their sexual orientation is. One of the things you want to see is can a candidate talk comfortably about sexual orientation? You're much more suspicious of the person who can't or who gets all nervous, whose color changes and so forth. And within religious formation, these issues are certainly talked about today, as because there's so much pressure from outside. There's so much awareness of the diversities among us.
Mm-hmm. Father Thomas Rausch, head of the theology department at Loyola Marymount University, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
And Jack Beatty, thank you for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
Rich, deep topic. I think we're going to hear more about it. Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at our new forums. Go to onpointradio.org and click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
From Boston.